And tonight, last time we talked about trying to get beyond Moses and the bulrushers. How do we teach children and take them beyond just the simplest of stories, although we talked about how these days a lot of folks don't even know the basic stories. A lot of folks don't know the basic stories. Okay, I thought maybe that was... I thought I'd laid one down there for you earlier. I was just going to see if you had an extra sheet there. I was making sure maybe you had one for each hand. Okay, well, maybe your eyes drifted, and so you have one over here and one over here. I had a friend that sometimes you never knew if he was looking at you or not. Always, yeah, always kept you guessing. Always kept you guessing. But tonight, as you can see, I want to talk about it also takes a church with children in crisis. Now, we did last fall talk about some of those kinds of issues, children in crisis, but wanted to look at it from a little bit different perspective and get some of your input and take on it. And then in 2 weeks when we wrap this up, we're going to talk about parenting virtues. What are virtues that parents need and that we can help with or that perhaps we need to help folks in caring for children, in teaching children, in guiding children as not just the future of the church, but children are part of our church now. We have children who have accepted Christ as their Savior and been baptized and participate in various ways. Children are part of the church now, not just for the future. In the study, Krushwitz writes, "How should we respond to the pain and grief that children suffer in crises, such as sexual abuse, divorce, and death? We can respond in creative ways to God's call to care for children beyond our families and faith communities." Although I would say it starts even in our own families, but then we move beyond. And I would add to this verbal abuse and other physical violence. It's not just sexual abuse, divorce, and death, but verbal abuse, other types of physical violence. And then how do we respond? Sometimes it's easier for us to respond to people and in situations that are outside our family than it is to respond within our own families. Jesus didn't express his love through gentle thoughts from a distance, though, but by active intervention to shield the children, to shield them from wrong, and he enlists us for that defense. We know of a lot of different passages, and we have these familiar stories of Jesus sitting and holding the children. In Matthew chapter 18, one of the things that kind of exposes Matthew as a Jewish author, a Jewish Christian author, and not a Gentile, is his fondness, among other things, for clumping things together in groups of three. There are a lot of things that he does and records things that Jesus said in groups of three, which would be very important for his Jewish and Jewish Christian audience to recognize the presence and the activity of God. But here in chapter 18, in the first several verses, we have three sayings that Jesus makes about the little ones. And while some have said the little ones, and in other places definitely the little ones mean those who are young in the faith, the disciples, they also mean children. At that time, the disciples came to Jesus and asked, "Who is the greatest in the kingdom of heaven?" And he called a little child and had him stand among them. And he said, "I tell you the truth, unless you change and become like little children, you will never enter the kingdom of heaven. Therefore, whoever humbles himself like this child is the greatest in the kingdom of heaven." And children are very humble and very malleable. And Jesus is indicating here that just as children are humble and malleable and look to parents and other adult figures to help guide them, so we too must be like that. And sometimes they get good guidance, and sometimes they don't get such good guidance. And Jesus speaks of that as well Whoever welcomes a little child like this in my name welcomes me. But if anyone causes one of these little ones who believes in me to sin, it would be better for him to have a large millstone hung around his neck and to be drowned in the depths of the sea." His second saying about the little ones is about protecting. Protecting the little ones. Protecting children. Helping to give them guidance, yes, but also helping to watch over them and guide them. And I think not just in teachings, but also physically and emotionally guiding children. Now, we're sinful creatures. Augustine says that we sin because we were born sinners. Others, including Arminius and some others, said, no, we're sinners because we sin. Chicken or the egg kind of thing. Augustine would say, we're born evil and with a terrible nature. But which one of us who has ever guided children, young children, which one of us has ever had to teach the child to take something that didn't belong to them? We have to teach them not to take something that doesn't belong to them. And Jesus is saying here, though, but if we teach them wrongly and we guide them into sin, you know, they're so precious, we have been entrusted with their care in so many ways, physically, emotionally, spiritually, and we can misguide them in any of those areas or all of those areas. It would be better to have a large millstone hung around his neck. That's the big grist millstone. I don't think even Jason Bourne could swim out of that if it was hung around his neck. Maybe not even Houdini. Only if they provided him with a little pin or something to pick the lock. Only Sean Connery. But here, you know, we're to care for those children. And of course, it's to start with our own, but then others around, not just our own. The third saying about little ones, verse 10 of chapter 18. See that you do not look down on one of these little ones, for I tell you that their angels in heaven always see the face of my Father in heaven. To look down upon was to look with disgust or consider one less than you are. And Jesus is here saying about children, be careful. They're precious. Don't look down upon them as if they're less than you are and treat them thus. For if they're the angels in heaven, see the face of my Father in heaven, then don't think you're going to get away with it. And then he launches into the parable of the lost sheep. Ending in verse 14. In the same way, your Father in heaven is not willing that any of these little ones should be lost. When you think of that parable in the lost sheep, when you see pictures of it, what kind of sheep is it that's generally held across the shoulders of that shepherd? A lamb. A young one. A little one. Not a ram. Not a big ewe. E-W-E. But a lamb. And I think that's not inaccurate, because that parable is told here in the context of speaking about little ones and caring for children and being like children, and begins and ends talking about children or little ones. That teaching continues. James, in chapter 1, talks about being... Most of the time when you say James chapter 1, he's all 120. Be ye hearers of the word and not doers only, deceiving yourselves. But I tend to go to 127 when I think of James chapter 1 and leading into chapter 2, where James, and we've talked about this before, where James defines what constitutes pure religion, bless you, true religion. Religion that is pure and undefiled before God the Father is this: that you visit widows and orphans in their affliction while keeping yourself unstained from the world. Unfortunately, We have a lot in the first category around here, don't we? Unfortunately for y'all, because then you got to put up with me visiting widows. But widows and children, widows and orphans, both of whom were seen as among the most vulnerable in society. But widows and orphans, true religion is involved in taking care of those who might need looking after. Just make sure you let certain of them know that you're coming in their house, because they got their CWPs. But then he moves on into chapter 2, talking about not showing partiality. And while he talks about men here, the wealthy man giving the seat of honor, the poor man getting a lesser seat, I think he would contend also that those who are among the poor are the children. The children who can't defend themselves. And we have, in our practice of our religion, if we forget to care for the children, not only do we doom potentially those children, but we doom our Christian faith. And so, what about some of these crises that children face, and how do we as a church, how can we help in various situations? Now, I'm not at all saying that we go and poke our nose in places that it doesn't belong, and if we get told to leave it alone, we keep going back and sticking our nose in there. You might get your nose lopped off, or even worse. But I am talking about ways that we can care and show that we care about children, and try and help children who are in crisis, even if the only thing we can do is let them know that we're available and that God is available to help them. First, divorce. Statistics, and these statistics are about a year old, year to year and a half old. Nearly 50% of children, so it may be higher now, nearly 50% of children spend at least part of their youth in single-parent homes. We're talking about in the United States, almost 50%. It's like 49.7-something-something percent. Spend at least part of their youth, and by youth, we're talking about from middle childhood through high school, in single-parent homes. Well, I don't have to tell you all, especially those who are here on Wednesday nights, about how many of the children are in single-parent homes, or some are in homes where the parental figures are not married, all kinds of things. And some of the things that we worry about when we make plans for different activities sometimes are whether the children are going to be here or not. But across the country, and yet even here in Piedmont or any place we would go, and a lot of times, we don't know how to respond in divorce, do we? Pastors, deacons, church friends often don't know how to respond, especially to respond to the effects on children. And most of the time, it's true. Folks like me, most of the time, talk with or counsel the adults and worry about how what it's going to do to the children. Douglas Adams, in his book Children, Divorce, and the Church, here writes about the devastation he experienced as a child when his father left the family. It was in the summer, and his father just up and left and said he wasn't part of the family anymore. They weren't his family, and he was divorcing and left. The pastor came. The pastor talked with the mother. The pastor offered support to the mother, but totally ignored the children. In fact, the suggestion was made that the children might ought to be in another room while they talked. And he said, and I quote, "If my pastor had stopped to talk with me that summer afternoon, maybe my life would have been different today." Because he felt left out. He felt pushed aside. Like he didn't count. So among other things, we need to help children as well. We need to help the children as well and provide care and a caring place to have discussions toward healing. don't know because very much because, about this because I spend most of my time with the adults on Wednesday nights. But on occasions when I've ridden the bus, I've been told about family situation with this child or the family situation with that child. And on occasion, a couple of those children on the ride before we pick up too many or everybody's talking real loudly, and I've had a couple of those children to say something about, you know, one of them one time was so excited because they were going to go get to spend the weekend with their daddy, and they hadn't seen him in months. This was late spring, and they hadn't seen him since Christmas. I remember our best friend's son. He was, but Pam, it's a second marriage for her to Steve, and Shane would beg. He would beg his mama not to send him when he got upper elementary school and beyond, not to send him. Part of the issue was that dear old dad had an ongoing drug problem and would be involved in the drugs while Shane was in the room. But the court system said, nah, he's got to have his visitation rights, so he has to go. And how do you deal with those kinds of situations? By the way, when they got older, when Steve and Pam got married, they went through all the things, and Steve adopted Shane. And that's his dad. And when he got married, he said, that's my dad. But how do we deal with those kinds of things? It's difficult, especially if you haven't gone through the experience or been close to someone who has gone through the experience. It's difficult to know what to say or how to deal with. And sometimes it's just being present and letting someone know that you're there to help however you can. I remember when I was teaching at Anderson that there was a couple who was going through very difficult times and were talking divorce, and the children were just kind of devastated, and some of the faculty members decided, especially in the religion department, decided that we would kind of take turns every so often for a few months and give them, we'd take the children and either bring them to your house and do something or go to the movies or take them to the park or something to give the parents some time to work through the issues without the children around and seeing what was going on and hearing what was going on. So there are all kinds of things we can do, even seemingly small things. But at the same time, the church is not the only place to help, and that's why I put in here, but we also need to involve appropriate professionals in other areas, not just spiritual care. I am one of those, and I have told folks when I've done counseling here or in someone's home, when they get to the point where it's beyond what I can do, let me make a couple of phone calls. You need to talk to somebody else that's trained in certain areas. So I don't think that the professionals in all those areas are the final say and the only part, but the church has to find its place in that as well. The church plays a part. Why? Because we have been given a commission by God and a commission by Jesus to care for the little ones, to watch out for the little ones, to visit the widows and orphans in their affliction while remaining unstained from the world. I wish fewer marriages ended in divorce, but divorce is one of those things that crosses all socioeconomic lines and religious lines as well. Well, in some instances, Ed, it would seem like that, you know, way back in the 50s, you didn't find the divorce so much, but now as church attendance has decreased, divorce rates increase. And you could make an argument that way, except that the divorce rate is actually no better for folks who are regular members and attenders in church, unfortunately, in this country, than those who are non-religious or rarely go. And I hate to say it even more, but the divorce rate among clergy is just as bad or just as high as it is among non-clergy. And so, you know, while I do think that perhaps regular church attendance and teaching can help stave off some of that, in some instances, in other instances, there are other factors that enter into it that, you know, we can't fix, but I think can be dealt with in a variety of ways by a team of folks. I do not remember growing up, even in high school. I didn't know anyone whose parents were divorced that I went to high school with. Now, there may have been some because there were 625 of my graduating. Well, there was supposed to be 625. The week before we started graduation practice, 20 of them we found out weren't going to make it. And then the day before graduation, five more didn't make it. But, you know, but there were 600 in my graduating class. And I didn't know everybody in the class, but I did not know anybody personally whose parents were divorced. And I think a lot of times people in an earlier time period just learned to survive it. That's not necessarily living. They learned to survive what was going on. Oh, I think so. I think so. Well, as I tell folks when I go to counsel with them, premarital counseling, I'll tell them, you know, now this thing doesn't come with a 6-month, 6-year, 50,000-mile warranty. You know, we need to treat it seriously, and I am serious. I joke a lot of times, but I'm dead serious. A lot of times, I think we need to put a sign up when there's a wedding, it says for adults only, because you know, marriage is for adults, not for kids to play at. But we do accept far too many things that we, in a lot of areas, that we don't, or that we didn't in the past. Well, and see, that's it. Well, I also talk a marriage. If marriage is worth entering into, then it's worth working for. And if you're not going to work at it, then you might as well not do it. So far, I've only had one that's not still together. And I probably knew better than to do that one to begin with, but it was a favor to my sister-in-law and her mother. It was her third. But to kind of keep peace in the family. But and that's not to say that they've all had easy times. I've done some counseling over the phone hours at a time with folks that lived off that I did at weddings. But at least for their sakes, I'll knock on wood. There's only one that isn't still together out of all of them. And I don't think that's necessarily because of me. Although I will tell you, I ask people, how'd you meet? And then I'll look at one or the other, and it just depends on how I feel that day, whether I ask the guy or the girl to go first. What's the first thing that you noticed? Okay? What's the first thing that you noticed? And then I'll say, okay, what's the most endearing thing? And what's the most endearing thing? And I say, all right, now it's your turn. And if Gene and Connie were here for that, I'd say, okay, Gene, it's your turn. I'm not asking you to do this tonight. Connie's not here to defend herself. But if we were sitting here and y'all were contemplating marriage, I'd say, okay, Gene, your turn. Without putting a lot of thought into it, what's the one thing that she does that gets on your last nerve? That's question number 3 or 4 that I ask. And then I would turn to Connie and say, okay, the one thing that Gene does that you just absolutely can't stand. It gets on you. Because I want folks to start out, okay, thinking about, no, it's not all just this nice, neat little the love boat kind of thing, but you need to know up front, and don't think you're going to change them once you get married, because once you get married you lose all the chips in the game that you have.
Learn my
Yeah, you can. I was taught. And woe be unto you if you have to leave it up in the middle of the night. And somebody says, well, I'm going to be nice and not turn the light on. But I think we need to work even more at that. And raising children is work. Which then gets us to other crises. Abuse. Sexual abuse is far too rampant. Physical abuse in other ways other than sexual abuse is far, far too rampant. Verbal abuse probably goes unreported and undealt with a whole lot more. In sexual abuse, you deal with a loss of innocence. Timothy Kearney says we need to watch for physical, behavioral, emotional, relational, and spiritual signs. Oftentimes, perpetrators use religion or scripture or paternalism to accomplish sexual abuse or get the child not to tell anybody. For the hospital, we have to go through every year computer-based training on different things, including sexual abuse in the workplace and sexual harassment in the workplace. But for the college, every spring now, we have to go through a thing. And I started trying to figure out a way to hook it up to the TV, but sometime we may look at that. And it takes like 35 or 40 minutes. And different pictures from experts, from youth that were abused, from people who were abusers, and it also talks about the signs to look for in all of these different areas. And how some people groom. They give gifts when they're not asked for, and they want to spend all their time with just that one child and don't want to be around adults and all this kind of stuff. But we need to watch out for the different signs that there might be some kind of abuse taking place. I mean, as one writer says, talk shows talk about it all the time. In fact, it makes you want to turn the channel, right? I don't know where they come up with some of these people on some of these shows. Oh, I'm sure. But, yeah. Talk shows talk about it. The churches shy away from it. I mean, really, churches shy away from talking about sexual abuse. But we have a role to play, but we also have a role to play in referral. If it's suspected, to refer. Physical abuse, anger management issues, previous physical abuse. Sometimes even religion is used to explain away physical abuse. I have often said, and I've told y'all, that when Stephen disappeared on us that one time near Christmas, after I found him in the toy store in the mall when he was like 4 years old and wandered away, that we stopped one of those little alleyways and I got to the seat of the problem real quickly. And he didn't wander off again. But it wasn't abusive. It was a couple of quick pops on his bottom and explained to him, and that was that, you know. But there are people who, unfortunately, we see it on the news all the time. Shaken baby syndrome, broken arms, broken legs, fractured skulls. And a lot of times it's just because they were angry and the child wouldn't be quiet. But religion sometimes is used to explain away abuse, and not just by people like David Koresh or Jim Jones, but others as well. We need to be aware of the signs of physical abuse and create a safe place where love and care are offered to victims. Some of the problems there is, and people sometimes say, well, why don't churches offer, and some do, but primarily it's divorce recovery or AA or NA or something like that. Why don't churches provide places like that for victims of and children of physical abuse to come? Well, part of that is an issue of privacy, and part of that's the stigma that comes about if people were to come to such a thing. and the stigma within the family. So maybe one of the ways we can do that is, and we've talked some about maybe offering parenting classes or having a list of referral services where if somebody suspects or we get the word out and somebody says, you know, well, this is going on, they can call the church and we can say, here's a phone number you can call, a referral number that you can call. Because we are part of the whole system. Verbal abuse. Sticks and stones may break my bones, but words can never harm me. Bull. Words can hurt even more deeply. Verbal abuse demeans. Be careful, Jerry. Verbal abuse demeans. Mortuary. Going to mortuary. Nah, who he's going to see beyond sick. Verbal abuse demeans people. Verbal abuse destroys self-esteem. Think as an adult what it's like if you are verbally abused or demeaned. How you feel. And now you're a child that looks up to the adult and who wants to do everything they can to please that adult. A parent, a grandparent, a teacher. And all they do is demean you and talk down to you. And what happens is it continues the cycle of other types of abuse and violence. How can we help children talk about these kinds of things and interrupt the cycle? We have to give them safe places. But also we have to make sure that we're safe in the ways we do anytime we counsel with folks on these. Especially with children, should never be in a room alone with a child. Should always be multiple folks in that room. It's rare. And it's never with a female. And it's rare even with guys. But it's rare that I ever do any counseling when I'm I don't ever do any when I'm the only one here along with that person. And it's extremely rare when I do it that the door's not cracked that far and there's somebody else in the building. And with children, it's even more important that there are multiple folks in that room. Some of the things that people do, they'll allow them to draw. Provide crayons, paper, pencils, and just get to talking and allow them to just start drawing. Or writing. And a lot of times you'll find out things that way and there'll be starting points. Different ways to be creative to try and help children and provide a safe environment. Not to try and get parents in trouble, but to try and find ways to help the child heal and stop the abuse. And you know how children's imaginations can be, and that's why we have to be very careful in all of this too. Not too long ago, we were keeping Sydney. I might have shared this with some of you. We were keeping Sydney, and she wouldn't. She's not the perfect child. Believe it or not, she's not perfect. Close, but not perfect. But there was something that Sydney wasn't going to do it. I said, Sydney, you need to do it. I don't want to. I said, Sydney, you have to. And she turned to go the other way. I said, Sydney, I'm going to count to three. Because I've heard Mommy say, one, two. All right, now I'm getting to three. One, two. I said, I'm going to count to three. And I said, one, because she's going the other way. I raised my voice. But I found out with that child, if you raise your voice, you might as well just smack her in the face because she'll start crying. Said, one, two. She did it, and she started crying. And Grammy said, why are you crying? She said, Grand Doc's mean to me. She said, Grand Doc's mean? She said, yeah, he counted at me. So, and then later on, she told Stephen, we saw him, said, yeah, but Grand Doc was mean to me. I said, yeah, Grand Doc was mean to her. And I said, how? I said, he counted at me. So, you know, you gotta watch that. But most of the time, if children will share something with you that there's a problem, don't just write it off. But listen. And that's one other thing. When we talk with children over these things, we need to make sure they know we're listening. What about grief over loss? You know, we think immediately of death. And Mark McClintock actually uses a hand puppet to help children understand about death. They have questions about death. And he's a ventriloquist. I'm not. But he'll use the hand puppet and be talking. The hand puppet's supposed to give an answer, and it doesn't. But the hand puppet is sad because a friend of theirs, father, had died. He didn't understand why God took him, and so and it's like a 3-page thing that he goes through that he's back and forth talking with a hand puppet and uses the story of Jesus and Lazarus to try and help there. But children grieve over other things. Loss of friendships. The best friend moves away or goes to another school. Or their best friend, somebody new, moves into the neighborhood and the best friend ends up playing with them instead. And, you know, we just kind of, you'll find somebody. But that's a devastating loss for a child. Their pet. Y'all seen that E-Trade commercial, you know, the one with the baby and the mother's got him hanging on the front and she's looking for something. She opens the drawer and says, "Wait a minute, my gerbil, you told me he went to live with somebody else." "I'm leaving, that's enough." Yeah. But but pets. Moving to a new school. Well, you think Chase would miss his snake? What kind is it? Okay. Well, I was going to say, as long as it's not an anaconda, because one day Chase might go missing. Or the child moving to a new school and they leave all their friends behind. When some things happened in northern Greenville County, I got a job at Anderson College. We ended up moving to Anderson from North Greenville when the new regime took over. Stephen was a rising senior, but he had friends there. David was in middle school. David was a big fish. David was tied for top of the class in middle school in his grade at Blue Ridge Middle School. He was tied for number one. He was a big fish when it came to sports and all this kind of stuff, and all of a sudden we moved to Anderson. And moving from Blue Ridge to the middle school in Anderson, all of a sudden he's number 62. And he knew nobody. That was a tough year. Tough year. Or the death of a loved one. And what do we often do as adults? We assume that their grief, it'll be brief. They won't be old enough to remember it. They'll forget about it soon enough. Well, you felt like kind of like Rodney Dangerfield, right? Yeah. No respect, moving around and around. Well, and some people do, but a lot of children don't, and they can't. And so how do we deal with that, and how do we help children when they have that loss and rebound? You know, a lot of times we try to help. Oh, we'll go out and we'll take them something. We'll buy them a toy, or we'll take them here, or we'll take them there, and they'll have fun, and they'll forget about it. But McClintock writes, a far more helpful response would be to guide them in developing healthy patterns of grieving. We need to seek to educate, for example, with death, we need to seek to educate children about death as a part of life, yet while being sensitive to their age and their ability to comprehend. I don't think we need to go as far as Aldous Huxley's Brave New World. in the movie that was made of that. I mean, the children were playing with playing in the mortuary with the dead bodies to teach them that it was part of life. Of course, that's also they went in the room and the production line belt that had the little embryo sacs with the babies developing in them going along. Aldous Huxley's Brave New World, or 1984. But trying to find ways to help. We know how we grieve over losses. How can we be creative, and how can we help children in crisis? And really help children in crisis from a caring perspective. It's not should we, but how do we? Because Jesus says, care for these little ones. Because James says, I want to make sure that wasn't Ken. Tell me I'm running out of time. James says, care for widows and orphans. So what can we do? Helen Harris says we must have a sincere desire to respond to and care for the pain of children. If we're not sincere, children are going to know it. If we're not sincere, children are going to know it. Keep talking about creatively doing and listening. Address the difficulties they face in dealing with divorce, abuse, and grief. And in that, we as the church should be part of the overall picture. We're not the only game in town. Social services isn't the only game in town. Although I know some folks at one of the psychological psychiatric hospitals in the upstate, or areas in the upstate, and there are several, and I have worked with three of them at different times, who, quite frankly, when a patient is admitted, especially a juvenile is admitted, there's a referral form, and I know this because I've seen a referral form, asking for ministers to be contacted or pastoral care services to be contacted. And if they do it at all, they highly discourage any contact with religious folks because they think they can solve the whole problem and that religion only complicates the matter. I've also been in a couple of meetings where there were discussions with those folks about that. But social services, psychiatric services are not the only game in town because we're not just social and psychiatric, psychological creatures. We're also spiritual creatures. But we need to find ways, I think, and contacts that perhaps some of you had over the years. You know somebody that's in this area and you hadn't thought about it and said, how about let's check and see if they would partner with us if we have people who are in need. And we probably do need to be more open in discussing problems and taking all measures to protect children in our care. More and more about that. More and more about that all the time. In fact, I got something in the mail the other day. South Carolina Baptist Convention is having a conference on protecting children. How do we protect children at church? And how do we at the church protect children? And it's more than, although everybody now is suggesting, and we do basic, but everybody is starting to suggest that anybody, not just your ministry staff, but anybody that works with children, pass a background check. Of course, we have to be a little bit, that's a delicate situation, especially if somebody's been dealing with children for 30 years. But perhaps we can learn some things from folks that have dealt with children for 30 years about how they make sure that those children are cared for, things that maybe we overlook. But taking all the appropriate measures we can to protect children in our care, our own as well as others. What are some other things we can do? I don't know. What are they?
A lot.
lot of out of sight, out of mind. Yeah. Well, we let a lot of times folks let the electronics, the movies, the TV, the games, the videos, the other things, they're the babysitters. And I think a lot of it goes back to something that we said early and Wesley brought up a few weeks ago again, said it goes back to the home. And one of the ways we can help, perhaps, is to help folks in the home, parenting, figure out ways. My granddaughter knows how to do the DVD player. She knows how to turn on the little boom box, turn it off, how to change everything in that. And she knows how to use a cell phone. And she's 4.5 years old. And I know some 4.5 and 5 year olds that know how to do a whole lot more than that, and some of them and that get on the internet. We had Sydney the other weekend. She said, "Grandoc, I want to play some games on a computer." I said, "Okay." She said, "I want to play this one." I said, "No, we can't play that one." They had all the bells and whistles. I said, "We can't play that one." "Why not, Grandoc?" I said, "Well, that game's too old for you, Sydney." "But why?" I said, "It's too old for you because of some of the things that that game deals with. There's a lot of things that are bad in that game and people getting hurt." "Oh, okay." I want to play that one. She said, and we play this little game. It was an innocuous kind of game. We played it, and then she said, "Can we play it again, Grandoc?" I said, "No." "Why not?" I said, "Because it was one free game, and I'm not paying $6.99. I said, "Grandoc's not paying $6.99 for you to play it again." "But Grandoc, I want to play it." I said, "I'm sorry, Sydney." She poked that lip out. I said, "We'll play something else, Sydney." But a lot of times, what would happen? I didn't do it. But there are a lot of folks that it doesn't matter. If the child wants it and it keeps them happy and occupied for a while and keeps them out of your hair, you do it. Yeah. Well, a lot of it. But so, no. Oh, well, and not only that, and look at Lindsay Lohan.
Yeah, what's the big deal?
You got these celebrities that they look up to, that they want to dress like and be like, and how many times has she been back in front of a judge? And I think there are ways, and we need to find ways to help children understand that just because other people are doing it doesn't necessarily make it good or right. And I think that's to truly show that you care. It's just like Debbie said was last week or week before, said about the Eli stories. Mm-hmm. Eli had acted up, and finally she had it and took him and started doing something with him, coloring and all this kind of stuff. And then when it was over, he said, "Miss Debbie, if I do something bad again next week, can we do this again?" That's the thing, craving the attention. instead of being pushed aside. And a lot of times, they can't wait to tell you because at home they don't get listened to. They don't get encouraged to be that way. Well, I think a lot of it goes back to family, and how do we get that across? Well, they do, and a lot of folks forget though that you can't legislate morality. It has to be something that is taught and comes otherwise. Thank you all. About time for choir practice. You can continue the discussions if you'd like. But we'll, in 2 weeks, now next week be doing hymn singing. But in 2 weeks we'll wind up talking about parenting virtues. Parenting virtues. Yeah, could have a guitar player or two next week. Thank you all. Have a good night. God bless you. Go in peace.